Hello, welcome to Beer Prime, episode 87, featuring County Durham's McColl's Brewery. Welcome to another episode of Beer Prime. In this episode, you'll hear my chat with Danny McColl of McColl's Brewery, based up in County Durham. We'll talk about their beer, brewing, and men's mental health. Prior to that, I'll be seeing if one of Danny's beers works as a shandy, as I also spoke with Laura and Michael, who have a YouTube channel called Does It Shandy? My next episode is the Homebrew Special, number 2, being recorded at Hopstop in Reigate next Wednesday, the 17th of April, and will be out for you to hear on the following Wednesday. Elusive Brewing's Andy Parker will be the special guest. He'll help James and me to judge the homebrews. And there's still time to get your name down for that if you're interested. Just email James at this address, info@hopstopbeers.co.uk. But Andy will also be there to answer your questions, whether it's about homebrewing or any of his professional brews. If you'd like to ask him a question but can't make it down on the day, just send me the question and I'll ask it for you. You can email it to me, beerprimeuk@gmail.com, or you can send it in a voice message, speakpipe.com/beerprime. That's also a way you can leave messages about the podcast too. If you don't homebrew but still want to come along to watch and to partake of some of Andy's fine beers, which will be on tap, then just head to Hopstop in Reigate on Wednesday, 17th of April. We'll be starting to record at around 6:30 p.m, but be there a little earlier. Okay, let's try to shandy a McColl's beer. Here's my recent chat with Laura and Michael from Does It Shandy.
Hello.
Hello.
Thanks for coming on. How are you guys today?
Great. I'm pretty good, yeah.
Yeah.
I've had a productive day at work.
Yeah. I've had a very hectic day. I've been here, there and everywhere today. But I feel like that's the best kind of day to culminate in a shandy, really. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, absolutely. So tell us all about how you decided to start Does It Shandy?
So I remember where we were, I think. I'm pretty sure we were in Jabberwocky. On London Road?
Yeah.
That's in Sheffield, is it?
That's in Sheffield. And I can't remember how it exactly came round, but I remember us basically getting fed up people taking beer far too seriously.
Yeah.
I don't know if there was a specific catalyst for that. There probably was, but I've forgotten whoever it was who was taking it far too seriously, probably for the good. And we just got fed up with people being really stuffy about it. And we felt like beer was becoming less fun. And at its core, beer is supposed to be fun. You're supposed to have fun with beer. Mm. And people were just over-regging it too much. And they were sapping all the fun out of beer.
I'm becoming a little bit, I think elitist is possibly a bit too far, maybe. But
gatekeeping?
Yeah. So I think we just wanted to do something that was just like, this is something we enjoy. We don't really care what anybody else feels. You know, it's just something that we want to do because it's fun. We don't take it seriously, as anybody who's watched any of our videos will probably tell. It's very, it's just something nice that we both drink shandy.
Yeah.
And realized before we started Does It Shandy that we were both a fan of a nice beery lemonade mixture. And just thought, let's have a bit of fun with it and just see what happens, really. We had the ranking system came before the idea of filming anything, didn't it? And kind of the criteria for what makes a good shandy was something that we had in place just as enthusiasts before we became shandy
aficionados. And a YouTuber is the worst, like.
Well, before you came to this, became the Shandy crew, right? So
yeah,
absolutely. Well, I mean, you've done 17 episodes and you started off with the classics, shall we say. You know, the first one was Anne Sebastian Hobday's Ordinary Bitter and Lemonade. Then you had the pilot Lemon Beer and Lemonade. So you started with the kind of classic mixing. But when did it get to a point where you started to think, we need to really shake things up and go with different pops?
I think that wasn't really a conscious thought. I think that was just always the way we were going to go anyway.
Okay.
We felt that it's more the opposite way around, that we kind of felt it necessary to start with the more traditional shandies, just so that everyone could get a flavour of what we were doing. And also more for us, we'd never been YouTubers before. We'd never recorded ourselves doing anything before. So I think maybe starting off by doing some more traditional mixes made it easier for us to kind of get ourselves into the swing of doing it on camera. So I think that was always a natural progression. And if anything, it was more of a conscious thought in the opposite direction, that we should start with the traditional and then move on to the more fun stuff rather than starting with traditional and thinking, oh, no, we need to change things up.
Right, so ease into it a bit then.
And maybe, yeah, exactly.
Maybe ease the viewers in as well to the concept. Mm-hmm. Don't go straight in with a wacky combination. Go with the classic and then bring the wacky combination.
I think we'd started off with the flump pop, then we might have put a lot of people off watching.
Yeah. I mean, do you get to a point now then that you've been doing it for a while that you go, when you go shopping, you spend more time in the pop aisle than you do anywhere else?
I think it's when you go to a different shop that you've not been to before. You know, like if you go shop into a supermarket when you're on holiday and you get excited by all the different flavours of crisps.
Mm-hmm.
It's that kind of thing for me.
I recently went to Berlin and there was a lot of things. I was like, oh my God, I could definitely get this mad flavour of pop or to bring back and do Does It Shandy, but obviously I couldn't because it was over 100 mil, but there was so many things that I could have brought back with me.
In fact, today I went with... We were talking before we started recording, weren't we, Paul, about the difficulty of finding an appropriate version of the pop we're going to use today. I don't want to do a spoiler yet.
Yeah.
But it's a very, you know, it's a mainstream pop, I would say.
Yeah.
And I was in my second shop looking for it, and I couldn't find any, but I could have bought drumstick lolly flavour. And I was like, this is... Who wants
Is that
this?
A cousin to the flump pop?
Probably. Yeah. I mean, completely different company, though. Different packaging.
I mean, obviously, these things don't go off, do they? So do you kind of, like, when you're looking for something, see that and go, oh, I'll grab that now for an episode in the future?
Yes. But also, as you might know from my release schedule, pretty bad at remembering to schedule to meet up. So there can be combinations that have sat waiting for a while.
Yeah.
Right.
And they don't go off, but they do go flat.
Yeah.
Which is a key lesson. Fresh pop is the best pop.
However, I am a much lover of flat pop when I'm hungover.
Yeah.
I used to always, back in my youth, pick up a can of Pepsi Max or Diet Coke, open it before I went on a night out and put it in the fridge, knowing that I'd have that lovely flat pop in the morning on a hangover because the bubbles were too much to handle. Like...
Right, yeah. That's a good tip. Excellent. So how do you choose the beer and pop combo when you're deciding what together? Is it the beer first and then the pop, or vice versa?
I think it's a bit of a mixture, really, isn't it? Like, sometimes there will be a beer that we're particularly interested to try, or sometimes it will be just wandering down the pop aisle and being like, that sounds like we could do something fun with it. So it's a real mixture. We have also had a couple of brewery requests, which is hilarious. Sometimes it's come from the producer of the beer has asked us, what do you think would work in a shandy, and we've had a bit of a play around. Just a bit of a mix, really.
I'm personally gobsmacked that we've not had more breweries getting in contact saying, please don't do this. And that we've actually had people saying, please do this. That's the bit that really surprises me. Yeah. I think, are we yet to have a brewery who said, please don't do this? Or why have you done this to our beer?
Yeah, the breweries have generally been incredibly receptive. Like, if we've filmed bits at festivals and things that. Mills springs to mind. I did a little, I don't think that went on YouTube. It was just on our I'm just calling it a Twitter page. I'm not messing about with this ex-nonsense.
Yeah, I agree.
I was down at Little Earth Fest and, went over to the mill stand, and Johnny Brewer, and owner of Mills, was just an incredibly good sport and was very excited for us to have a go. So, I think it's in terms of breaking down those barriers and kind of, you know, Mills is a very sophisticated beer brand, and we were doing something very unsophisticated with it. But he was really great about it and enjoyed the shandy himself too.
Excellent.
There's been a couple of breweries that I think have resolutely ignored the fact that we've done a shandy.
Absolutely within their rights and fine.
Nobody said, I can't believe you did that. But I think we need to try and say, you know, if we do destroy a beer, we'll perfectly happily say this is not a good thing to do to this beer.
Yeah. No, that's right. I mean, as I was saying to you before we started recording, I've watched all your episodes, and you do say that a few times. You're in fact sometimes saying, "I'm so sorry that we've done this to the beer." But I mean, tell us what is the? I'm going to start with worst first. What is the worst one you've done?
I just can't get past the flum pop.
Yeah, I mean, I can't remember the particularly atrocious ones as much. I think the flump pop was horrendous. There was no redeeming features to it whatsoever. And that was our most recent episode, wasn't
the
it?
The flump pop flop, we could call that.
It was dreadful. I feel like we did a really bad one quite early on that I can't recall. When we did Dandelion and Burdock, that was horrendous.
Yeah, you did. You did that when you did you did the Schenkeler Rauch beer with it, and you did three different hops, one of which, the KA Pineapple, you said it was like pineapple on a pizza. So
I'm sure we'll come on to that. Yeah.
I don't say that too loud, pineapple on the pizza. My wife's Italian. I don't think she would enjoy that.
Oh, no.
But then, then you had Fanta Peach and then Dandelion and Burdock, which can't stand straight away.
I also don't like Dandelion and Burdock, but I think with the Schenkeler, that was a bad mix.
Yeah.
But I guess it's important for you to try things, even if you don't like them.
Oh, yeah, 100%. It'd be an absolutely terrible show if it was Yes It Shandies. Do you know,
like, there's been so many that have surprised us. Like, there's things that we think will work that really, really don't, and things that we kind of just, you know, we throw together because the colours of the pop bottle look nice next to the can that are delicious. So,
well, I think the best example of that was a Christmas episode, wasn't it? The Baby Sham and Mills and Hills.
Yeah.
Where that was surprisingly decent. Yeah. Like, we went into that fully just doing, this was a bit of a Black Velvet fun. Like, it'll be a good lark just to do this. But it was actually decent. Yeah. It was much better. I was expecting to hate it. Like, it was really decent.
Excellent. Okay, then, what's the best one?
My favourite is the Track Lime Radler Riddle Me This.
With Krabby's ginger beer.
Krabby's ginger beer.
That was a turbo shandy. That's the one I often cite to people more than anything, because it was proper lime sour.
Yeah.
And that beautiful Krabby's. I'm partial to a Krabby's. I know it's big. It's not really big beer, is it? But it's like, it's a big corp. I'm right partial to a Krabby's. In fact, I almost picked up a Krabby's today when I couldn't find anything else. But that is, to me, one of my favourites. I think the Schlenkerler and KA Pineapple
that was great.
Sensational. I would advise that to anybody. So, so good. Mm. Smoky pineapple, like, perfect.
Yeah, you know what? Of all the ones that I saw you doing, that was probably one of the only ones that I thought to myself, I might give that a go.
I would recommend it. I really would. It's really, really nice.
Yeah. I mean, I love the Schlenkerler Rauch beer myself anyway. So, you know, I do love it. So, putting some pineapple in it, we'll see. Okay, so do you draw the line at any combinations? Is there anything that you would say that we would never do that?
Wow. I don't know. I've not really considered that, to be honest.
Yeah, we haven't as yet, have we?
No.
No.
Okay. I don't. The more I think about it, is there anything I'd be like, absolutely no?
I don't think so.
Well, that's
No.
good because then at least that gives you plenty of options as the episodes go on. So there you go.
Maybe only make a teeny tiny one of certain things.
Yeah, I think so. Like, you have to be really careful with portions, etc.
Yeah. Okay. And has there ever been a beer that once you, because I see that you pour the beer at first, you taste the beer first before you then shandy it, which I like that. I like that way around. At least you're tasting the beer straight off. But has there been any beer that you have put into the glass, tasted it, and thought, you know what, we're going to, because this is the format of the show, but I really don't want to adulterate this with a pop.
Absolutely not.
No.
No. Okay.
No beer is beyond shandying.
No.
I'd be very
Yeah.
firm on that. I would never, ever. I think both of us would judge the other one intensely if we
Yeah.
said, "Oh, let's not do it to this one. It's too good." That is against the raison d'être of the entire
Yeah.
show, which is that
Yeah.
people take it far too seriously,
Yeah.
and put beer on too much of a pedestal. So.
I think that's actually one of the other things that kind of inspired it in my mind. I'm also quite a keen whiskey drinker. And I went to the whiskey show down in London a few years ago. And that's similar, where it's quite, there's a lot of tweed jackets with elbow patches and people spending a lot of money and taking the whiskey incredibly seriously, which is fine. But I felt a little bit at the time, this was going back quite a few years, I felt like I didn't really belong. As somebody who just wanted to enjoy the drinks. And then somebody was running a whiskey highball class, and which I suppose is the shandy of the whiskey world. And it was just an absolute revelation. It was so fun. They were so refreshing. You're at this session where it's 4 hours of just drinking teeny tiny little whiskeys. Actually, having a Laphroaig and Coke in the middle of it was absolutely fantastic. And that's something I still drink now. It's a really lovely drink. And a lot of people go, "Oh, you can't put Coke in Laphroaig." And I'm like, "Why? I like it." And I think it's the same kind of principle here. Like, yeah, it's you can take a beer that's good, and yeah, the shandy might not make it better, but you've still tried the beer, and you never know, that it might be something that you enjoy on a different level.
Well, I mean, that takes you back, takes us back to what you were saying before about, the big, when you started off about the gatekeeping and about how people are so serious about beer. I mean, I suppose that doesn't just happen in beer. That does happen in the world of whiskey and probably a lot of other,
Wine,
worlds as
coffee.
well. Wine, yeah.
I've counted it too many times now. When you go to beer festivals, and people are too obsessed with you meet someone new at a beer festival, he's into beer, and they care too much about getting across how much they know about beer, and not enough about actually coming across as a likable person you'd want to talk to. Like no one, everyone just tries to impart as much kind of beer facts and beer stuff at you in a quick succession.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's like, can you just talk to me about literally anything
Yeah.
else? A conversation would be nice rather than like a list of the IBUs you've had on recent beers. Like, I think it's gotten too far in terms of, yes, beer is an art form, it's meant to be enjoyed and admired, but it's not to be put up on a pedestal. Not at this, not if you're sacrificing the fun of drinking it.
I was thinking about when we were talking about whether when you go to the supermarkets and you go down the pop aisle, you guys would have an absolute field day. I was out in America several years back, and we were in Oklahoma City, and just outside on Route 66, there's a place called Pops. Okay, it's called Pops Soda Ranch. They have every single possible flavor that you've ever heard of, and then every single flavor that you can never even dream about. I mean, bacon flavored
Oh,
soda.
do you know, go back to you asked us, is there a
Oh,
line? Yeah.
exactly. You've never come across a bacon flavored soda, and it's one of those things that when we were there, we got several bottles, but you kind of get a few of the ones that you want to try. You have to get a few of of the really horrible sounding ones, because it's one of those things that you got to try it. You got to see if it's as awful as it sounds. And yes, it is as awful as it sounds.
I was thinking we put pineapple pop in Schlenkerle, which is renowned for tasting a bit like bacon.
Well, yeah.
Pineapple beer, so put a bacon fizzy pop
in. I'm thinking maple stout.
Oh.
Ooh. Not so crazy after all then, maybe.
The posher and more expensive maple imperial stout you can get.
£15 a can, and then put bacon flavored soda in it. Right, shall we try a shandy combination? Shall we try and shandy something?
Yeah.
Okay, brilliant. I'm just going to reach over for mine. They're just sitting out of reach at the moment. So whilst I do that, why don't you tell everybody what we're going to be shandying today?
Okay.
So we have got, in keeping with the rest of the podcast, we have got a beer from McCall's Brewery.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I'm holding it up to the camera. Nobody's going to see but it's called Lowlands Hoppy Pale Beer, 4.8%. I thought this sounded really interesting because hoppy pale beer sounds fairly normal. And then it says on the back that it falls somewhere near an IPA, but comfortably next to a Belgian Saison. So all of a sudden we're like, ooh, that sounds really interesting. I've heard really fantastic things about this beer, but I haven't tried it before.
Well, yes, like you, this will also be my first time trying it. And I've also been given lots of people have extolling its virtues, including actually Steve, the Beer O'Clock Show, thinks it's one of his favourite beers of the last year. I'm going to leave a large amount in the second glass so that I can actually drink the unadulterated beer as well. So I'm going to do both.
About, I want to say, not at this year's Indie Beer Feast, but the year before, I talked to McColl's when they were there. And we discussed the idea of doing something together of our own shandies. Ooh. So I think McColl's are fine with this. I don't think they're
also
bothered.
Just on the, is this the beer that was described by the Craft Beer Channel earlier this week, last week, as the Taras Bulba of the UK?
I think it was. I think it was.
So
there you go. Wow.
It smells fantastic.
It does smell really good. You definitely look like a Belgian yeast strain.
Mm. Wow, there you go. Let's have a look at that.
Ooh.
Right, let's give it a... Oh, marvellous smell.
That is
very,
really
very,
good.
Very good.
Wow. Wow, it's, yeah. It's that is fantastic.
It's spicy. It says with Halotau Blanc and Galaxy, and you do
the
really
Halotau
get
Blanc,
like
definitely
you get a beautiful kind of noble hop character in the base and then like a punch up front as well.
I'm getting bags of melon.
Absolutely. And it's just, I mean, definitely is, I agree that it is like a Saison. You are getting that quite subtle Belgian-y funky yeast coming through. I don't think it's a kind of punch you in the face flavor, but it's definitely subtly there,
and it's got a lovely
extremely refreshing
as well.
It's very carbonated as well, I find. It's more carbonated than I'd expect to pale ale of a can to be.
What are we going to be shandying this with then?
So, because of the kind of saison-y connotations of this beer, I thought going for something with a little bit of spice to it might work well. So we have picked Old Maker Ginger Beer.
Okay.
Which, giving the beautiful clarity and subtleness of the beer we've just tried, I think overwhelm this.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go right in and say, let's not do a 50-50.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I was going to ask what the ratio should be. So what do we think then?
I'd be tempted by 70-30.
Yeah.
Okay.
Obviously, it's not an exact science. Look, you're popping. Don't ever measure your pop out, for the love of God. No one needs to be measuring their beer and pop out. Don't take it that seriously. Just...
We need a bit more than we would if we were just doing a Saison top.
Yeah.
But yeah, I about 7-30, I reckon.
Yeah, I reckon so. I think if you put 50-50, the old Jamaica's going to absolutely destroy the beer.
And we can always put more in. But...
Exactly. Once it's there, it's there.
And I use the wrong glass. Never mind.
Right. Okay. So, are we ready to give that a try?
No, I think we're still mixing on end.
Okay. No rush.
Oh, this is exciting.
Oh, wow. I'm really, really getting the ginger beer on the aroma.
It's gonna, yeah.
Wow. I mean, like to the degree that you're getting nothing else.
I think I'm all right there.
Yeah, I think I'm all right as well.
I might have done more than 30 then. Let me just talk up a little bit of beer.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what I can still smell as well.
I mean, it does smell.
Yeah, that's better. That's better. Yeah, I think I'd put too much ginger beer in.
Nose. I don't know why if that ginger beer has done anything, but I'm getting slightly more floral than from it now. Right, we're gonna go in.
We're gonna go in. Absolutely. Cheers. Let's go. Cheers.
It tastes like a lawnmower.
It does taste like grass.
Have you tasted many lawnmowers then?
Yeah, when you've just mown the lawn and there's that like wet grass.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's exactly what it tastes like. Do you know what though? I don't hate it.
I don't hate it.
I did say it had a floral characteristic. That's definitely, it's completely changed the beer.
Oh, it has. Totally has. Yeah. I mean, you were right. I mean, very, very good call there not to do a 50-50. I think it would have totally overpowered it.
You can still get the beer in there, but it's completely changed the characteristics.
Yeah. Yeah.
Before I was getting like melon and grape and kind of like soft kind of their flavors like that, but now I'm getting just all grass and
It's very very herby, isn't it? Very herby, floral. Exactly. Yeah.
Mm. It's made it savory.
Mm. I'm not sure I agree with that.
It's not so dry anymore on the finish of the beer either, is it? The ginger beer has definitely, sweetened it up, really.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be ginger beer, isn't it?
But yeah.
I think we're a bit different on our end here, because I think Laura is holding back that she's not very impressed.
I don't hate it. I just feel like I'm gonna go out here and say I don't think it's Shandy's, because I think the beer is so lovely and delicate. And even though I don't think we've overpowered it completely, we've changed it beyond what that beer is intended to be.
And of course, that's what the criteria is, isn't it? It's not whether you actually would drink it. It's whether it improves the beer or not.
Yeah.
Or remains the same, I think. If they can go alongside each other, the answer is yes. So that's the house rule. The beer, the pop has to either improve or at least not ruin completely or kill the beer.
Yeah.
So I'm going to agree with you that it doesn't shandy, but I think the end product is, I find it refreshing and enjoyable.
Yeah, it's not something you'd pour down the sink, but I totally agree with you. I don't think I would prefer to have that than just the beer itself.
No, I wouldn't, but I'm not mad at that combination.
It's a very interesting combination as well. And that's the other thing that's nice is to think about what other flavours are in there that aren't brought out until you put the pop in, because I can't really taste ginger beer.
No, the ginger's not overwhelming at all. There's ginger in.
I am getting sort of ginger at the back of my throat, the back of
throat. It's more that it's still there, but the ginger isn't overwhelming the flavour. It's really
it's not a powerful flavour. I mean, to be fair, I didn't try the ginger beer on its own first either, so I'm not sure what the flavour of that was and what that brought to the game. But
1.95 litres more.
I'd say 1.98, actually, but there you go.
I can't remember the last time we did a shandy where the pop changed the characteristics of the beer as dramatically as this has.
No, I can't either.
Mm. Well, there you go. Oh,
well, that's really
you've used ginger beer before, haven't you? It's one of the ones...
It's the most traditional shandy. Well before lemonade came, it was always ginger beer or ginger
ale. Was it really?
Yeah, that's what a lot of pubs in England used to have a tap for ginger beer or ginger ale, and that was the original shandy. It was never lemonade. So
Ah, I didn't know that.
a lot of the old boozers would have a ginger beer or ginger ale tap.
Yeah.
End of eight, I want to say end 1800s, early 1900s or something. Like,
Ah.
I can't remember the word for it now. It's got its own name.
yeah,
I'll have to
but
look that up
that
now.
was the OG shandy, really, for ginger
Yeah.
beer.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I think I agree with you guys that it's not awful, but yeah, it's not a overwhelming success.
I like it. I really do. I think it's enjoyable. I just don't, I
Yeah.
think the beer is so good that it's undoubtedly worse than the beer.
Yeah.
But if someone gave me a glass of that, I'd be quite happy.
Yeah.
I could quite happily carry on drinking that.
Yeah. I suppose this is the issue, though, isn't it? That you might have is that with the quality of some of the beers, and if you're trying this with, these kind of beers rather than just like your bog standard ones, then theoretically the quality of the beer is always going to be better than the shandy, unless of course you are then using a ridiculously, well, like a £5 Ventimans ginger beer or whatever. But how about things like the not the the fizzy ones, like squashes or things like that? Would you
Oh,
ever
maybe I
give
do
that
draw the
cracker?
line at squashes. Maybe that's where I draw the line. I
You'd
don't
never
think
put
I'll
a
have.
squash. Has to be fizzy, does it have to be?
Yeah, I
Yeah.
think so. I
yeah, I think I agree. It's not something we've ever thought
I
about,
mean,
really, is
look,
it?
when I've been on a long cellar cleaning shift, or I've been cleaning some hotel rooms, something like that at work, then I quite often have a lager shandy when I finish with a dash of lime cordial in. That's fine, but
Yeah,
just
lager and
cordial.
lime, yeah.
No, I don't like lager and lime.
Oh, I do.
So I like lager, lemon, and lime, but interesting. I don't think we'd use squash in a dessert shandy. I think that maybe is our
Yeah.
point. Yeah.
Right, so we're all in agreement then. It doesn't shandy.
No, it doesn't, Shandy.
But that's because the beer is absolutely
The
fantastic.
beer is
And
and I'm so glad that
amazing.
I've actually got a decent, two-thirds of a glass of that
We've got a little bit
Yeah.
left. We've shared a can, so
Fantastic.
nice
Well,
beer.
it's been a great experiment. I've really enjoyed it.
Thanks
And
for having us.
I really enjoyed chatting with you guys about Does It Shandy. So, have we got lots more episodes that we can expect to come out?
There's definitely at least one that we've recorded that is yet to be released, if I'm correct.
And we don't have any plans to stop doing it, do we?
No. Again, though, it is for us more than anything, does
Yeah.
it, Shandy? So
Yeah.
we're not going to be tied down to a strict release schedule or anything like that, because
Yeah.
we're not bothered if about it being successful or anything like that. We just want to have fun. So
Yeah.
Well,
we just want to release when we can. We've both got busy lives.
sure, absolutely, yeah.
If anything, it's quite a nice thing because look, we don't get to see much of each other. It's actually quite a nice way of just making us see each other every now and
Yeah.
again.
And the crow where Michael works has got a keg of the prickly pear Schafferhofer
Oh.
waiting in the wings. So
Ooh.
that's a
That's
perfect
definitely,
excuse for us
there's almost
to.
certainly that will be a Does It Shandy episode
Yeah.
because I'm very ex we are Schafferhofer lovers here, so
Fantastic. Excellent.
prickly.
Well, good luck with all the future episodes. I'll be keeping on watching, so good luck in all of those.
Thank you
And
very much.
thanks so much for coming on and chatting with me and sharing your knowledge and wisdom about what shandies and what doesn't.
Well, thanks for having us.
Excellent.
you.
Cheers then. Bye-bye.
Cheers, bye.
That was great fun. Check out their YouTube channel where you can find their back catalogue of 17 videos, and they're not too long, so you can easily catch up. Well, after taking ginger beer to one of his most highly rated beers, it was time to speak with Danny McColl from McColl's Brewery. Hi, Danny. How are you today?
I'm very well, Paul. Thank you very much for inviting me to come on.
Not a problem at all. Really, really glad you could make it. Now, I'm going to pour out a beer. As I was just telling you prior to hit and record, I'm going to go with your Keke Cold IPA. Can't wait to try that. I notice you've got a beer. What are you drinking?
I went for the beer of the moment, London Black, and Stafford
Oh.
Lodge.
Oh, yeah. Now it's
They're
in
nice little
cans,
bottles.
eh?
Oh, beautiful man. Like, matte black. They've almost got a velvety feel to the can, which is just a beautiful layer of like quality on top of the beer itself. And then just gold, black and gold. It's just beautiful, man.
No, it's classy. It's classy stuff, isn't it? And the beer, obviously, great, great, great beer too. I'm so happy it's in cans now. I've been waiting for that to happen for a while.
Yeah, man, yeah.
Excellent. So, Danny, tell us all about McColl's and when you started it up.
Oh, wow. How long's the programme? we can have a decade on this. So McColl's Brewery were based in a beautiful working class village called Evenwood in South County Durham. An ex-coke production village. And the brewery is sited where the manufacturers of coke were based. So a real heritage to kind of the community that we're based in. We've been there for, oh God, we're coming up to our 7th birthday in May this year.
Wow.
So
nice.
We've been there 7 years, and it's not where I'm from. It's very familiar. It's very similar to where I was brought up in Newcastle near Whitley Bay. But the locals just took us to heart, loved us. Like, I couldn't imagine a nicer place to have a brewery. Just the sense of community, willingness, happiness, positivity, and just, I don't know, good old-fashioned fun, just good fun. So, yeah, we've been there. I totally digress. I always go off on a tangent. we've been there 7 years. We've had a turbulent history, just with, like, finding our feet and what it is we do and, like, where we want to steer the ship. But the last 3 years post-COVID have just been a real steadying of, like, what we do, what we stand for, the beers we produce. So yeah, now we're on a really kind of like positive, sure step forward now. So yeah, hopefully I'll get to talk about the styles and what we produce later on.
Oh, for sure we will. Yeah, absolutely. By the way, the cold IPA is incredible. Absolutely gorgeous. Really, really enjoying that.
It's a little belter. Nice and crisp, nice, refreshing, light, but with that nice hoppy IPA aroma.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly what I love about the style. That's exactly the, you know, the hybridization of the IPA and kind of lager. Just beautiful. And this is a great, great example. So congrats on that. But of course, congrats mainly would go to Cy, your head brewer. You're talking about like 3 years post-COVID. I think he's been with you nearly 3 years now, hasn't he?
He has, yeah. You know what? 3 years in 3 weeks' time. It was the middle of April when he arrived. So pre-Sci, or let's pre-COVID, pre-Sci, I don't know which one's more eminent. we were just putting anything out there. We were putting it out there, hit or miss. Some beers would be amazing. They'd be received brilliantly. And some would literally just explode in can or just not be what we were trying to create. And we were missing the mark.
Mm.
3 years down the line, with Cy on board, we haven't released a beer that we're not super proud of, that we're not super confident of, and that hasn't been received really well. Just what he's brought, and I'll go into his history, what he's brought is just a professionalism, a consistency, a reliability, and probably beyond all of that, which is super important, is a confidence in work that we can talk about the beers, we can project what we're going to do, what we're going to offer to people, and just deliver on it, and usually surpassing like our expectations and where we're hardest critic. But we've got to a point where the critical analysis is being done all of the time internally. But Cy has just brought a confidence that the bar is really high, and he pushes himself to improve every little aspect. And I think it's what people are starting to see from as a brewery, that they can start to rely on and get really tasty beer at the end of the day.
Yeah, yeah, no, for sure. Now, you mentioned about, you had talk about Cy's background before he came across to McColl's. Yeah. So why don't we start there now?
Yeah, man. So he's a very proud, I'll say, monkey hanger. I don't know if people know what that is.
That's Hartlepool, isn't it?
Hartlepool, Hartlepoolian.
Yeah.
Everyone's proud. I think you're proud from wherever you come from. But I think within the brewing industry, they've got that real heritage of having the Cameron's Brewery being literally the centre of the town and the major employer of the town. And so many people in the brewing world, like the craft brewing world, or even macro brewing world, have gone through Cameron's and moved into different like areas within the brewing world. So Si's kind of cut his teeth with some brilliant like colleagues. He's worth his salt with his contacts, so he knows a lot of people in the industry. But he grew up there, starting off in the lab, so in the quality kind of assurance lab, understanding, like, working under a microscope, doing daily tests for beers, getting them back, recording them, analysing them, and making sure that beers were on spec. And if I was to jump a stage, that's what he's brought to McColl's. But in between then, he ended up obviously in the main brewery, brewing some of the world's most famous beers at colossal scale with exceptional specifications to be met at. So you can brew beer to any specification. And then for the craft beer kind of people who know, Cameron's launched Tooth and Claw about 5 years ago. Si and a colleague of his called Youssef Dabouni, who's a brilliant, he works at Brew York now. They, along with a couple of us, launched Tooth and Claw within Cameron's. And Si was instrumental in, like, oh, what's the official word? Where you basically implement and deliver the whole, the brewery, the specification for all the beers, commissioning the canon line, and just getting everything from recipe, brewing, fermenting, and then packaging. Si was overseeing pretty much everything.
Wow.
On a really good microbrewery scale. So 20 hec, which is like 2,500 liters brewing every batch. But he was doing that on a very repetitive scale, cutting his teeth and kind of developing his skills on a smaller microbrewery level rather than the big Cameron site. So even before he came to us, he'd already had knowledge and like the capabilities at both ends of the brewing world. And then I think the creativity just got sucked out of it. And it became just a rinse, repeat kind of big toy almost. And he wanted to start brewing beers that he loved, have more of a direct influence on the direction of a project and a brewery. And the chance came up. And I was not daft enough to pass on it. I knew Si was a legend. Got on with him really well through knowing him through working together in the past. And just bit his hand off to get him to join McColl's back in April 2021.
Wow. Well, it sounds like a catch.
He is, and I hope he doesn't listen to this because he'll probably be
And he'll ask for a raise as well.
I know, no. I'll take all that back. No, he's a legend. He's a great lad to go out on the drink with. He's a great lad to like just have a natter with. And pontificate over beer. Yeah, he's spot on, man. Couldn't be happier. Couldn't be happier.
Excellent, excellent. Well, it sounds like that he's found a great home for him as well. Not just that, you know, you found a great brewer, but he's found a perfect home to deliver the style of beer that he likes to produce.
I think we work really well together. We kind of bounce off each other. We give and take. We've got a very similar appreciation for certain styles. So I think there is a good level of like gelling together.
Excellent. Right. Okay. So we're going to come on to some of your beer styles. You were talking earlier about wanting to talk about some of your beer styles. So we're going to talk about a couple of your, well, I think you've got three core range beers. You've got Crowded, a Pilsner, a Mellow, a Session IPA. But you've also got Lowlands, which is described on the front of the can as a hoppy pale beer, but is actually more towards a Saison. Now, there's a few things about that, because A, I mean, that's extremely bold of you to have a Saison as a core beer, but also most recently, and what I'm sure encapsulate all of this in the conversation about Lowlands, you guys were one of five breweries to watch that were underrated breweries as part of a Craft Beer Channel video. And they called Lowlands the UK's Taras Bulba. I mean, is that a pinch? That's a pinch yourself moment right there, isn't it?
It's a bit crazy when you drink them beers, even like when you're starting out and you're kind of appreciating different styles. And that's one of the beers that me and Si both love. To have even just mentioned in the same sentence is a bit crazy. Si, that's what Si is trying to produce. With a slightly different audience. So not exactly trying to create like a Taras Bulba-esque beer. But in his mind's eye, that's where we would love to take the brewery. So to be mentioned in that kind of company is, so I was like, Jesus, that's some reputation to live up to. But
it is.
We won't step back from it. We'll keep on pushing that, and we'll try and refine things. And we've got long term plans to maybe move towards those styles of beer and a little bit more commitment. But to have Lowlands mentioned side by side with Taras Bulba is amazing.
Yeah, incredible. And also, not just obviously the, you know, very kind words about the beer, but also being featured on the Craft Beer Channel video as, you know, a hugely underrated brewery. That must have been a nice thing to see.
It is indeed. I think when you've got your head down, just plugging away at what you do. And if we say post-COVID, it's getting on for four years, since COVID struck. To think of all of them big decisions that we've made, and one of them ultimately being to commit a Saison to a core beer, but even just to keep the brewery going through the middle of COVID, to getting Si on board, having a rebrand, et cetera, and then committing to what we do and why we do it, is to hear words like that is really satisfying. So,
yeah.
It doesn't pay the bills. Doesn't sell more beer. But it's reassuring that we're on the right path. And to hear that from contemporaries is very nice.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I've got a bit of a confession to make.
Yeah.
Yesterday, I tasted Lowlands for the first time. It's the first time I had it. And by the way, absolutely loved it. Really, really good. Now, I was actually recording another segment for this episode, which listeners have already heard by this point.
All right. Wow.
And, basically, it was with the guys who do the YouTube channel Does It Shandy.
Oh, wow. Oh,
so
we met them at Sheffield. The Beer Feast last year.
Yeah. So what we did is we had a look to see if Lowlands shandied with ginger beer.
Oh, wow. Cool. Not a bad.
And the verdict was that whilst it was a decent, I mean, the addition of the ginger beer, we made sure that we didn't go on a 50-50 ratio. The ginger beer would have overpowered the flavours of the subtle flavours of Lowlands.
Yeah.
So we went for about 70-30, and the resulting shandy was perfectly drinkable, nothing wrong with it. But the verdict in the end was it doesn't shandy, because their criteria is that it has to be as good as or better than the individual beer itself.
Cool.
And
it
was not, because the beer itself was incredible. And I will say that when I poured out my portion of beer to Shandy, I made sure that I had tons of it left to drink unadulterated with the ginger beer. Brilliant. So I could really enjoy the Lowlands on its own. But it was a good experiment, and it was really nice to try that out.
And you know what? Nothing should be off the table when it comes to beer. There should be no hierarchy of what is right, what's wrong, what works, what doesn't. You can stumble upon the next best thing by doing something like that. And if it's your favourite beer, or if it does shandy, who's there to tell you that's wrong? So I love it. And I thought you were going to say that the ginger bounced off and made the whole spicy kind of delicateness of Lowlands like elevate, but it obviously just like cancelled it out. It just obviously got in the way.
Yeah, kind of a little bit. I mean, you could no longer, well, actually, I guess you could still taste some herbiness, a little bit of spicy, but then I was wondering whether that came from the ginger itself anyway.
Yeah.
And I think, the ginger beer did, I mean, yeah, with a 50-50 split, it would have been totally overpowering. I think with 70-30, there was enough remaining of the aromas and the flavours of Lowlands. But I think I preferred it definitely on its own, for sure.
Yeah, cool, man. No, I think, Lowlands for us is one of those beers where you can almost drink it and not think about it. You can just devour it because it's got a layer of complexity and nuance to it that you can really pick up if you're looking for it. But it's one of those that just, I think it's got the little hallmarks of just that perfect pintable beer. So you can just nectar down the hatch.
Yeah. Exactly. But I mean, that's exactly what Saison was, the style was invented for, wasn't it? It was, farm workers coming off the field after the harvest, after a long, hot, hard day's work, and just getting a beer that they could just sink.
Exactly that. And I'll probably run the risk of sounding a bit, I don't know, a bit too simplistic. I'm borderline like utilitarian with me beer, and that's not like an over consumption kind of like angle. It's like sometimes you just want a beer to quench your thirst, to do its job, and to just, don't know, just really refresh you and enjoy you, rather than it having to be something that you pontificate over. And I can imagine them farm workers, all they wanted was something to just slake their thirst. I love that aspect of a good crisp beer.
That's totally true. You know, they weren't sitting there, you know, thirsty for a beer after a long, hard day's work, taking a few sips and swirling it around in their glass, what are you getting here? What are you getting, grassy? Are you getting? No, they weren't. They were just draining that beer, weren't they?
Totally, man. Totally. My favourite beer in the world of all time is a farm labourer's beer, Bière de Garde, called Trois-Monts, from the Pays de Calais region of northern France, like on the border with Belgium.
Yeah.
And just a nectar-like, big, boozy, malty, neckable bottle of beer. It doesn't have to get more complicated than that in my eyes.
Well, I mean, nicely done, because, of course, you guys do a Bière de Garde yourself with beetroot called Beet de Garde. So, come on, tell us about Beet de Garde.
Wow. So, I've already mentioned two of the co-creators. So, back in Cy's day, back in the Cameron's day, Cy was working on Tooth and Claw, and Youssef was working with them to kind of do the branding and marketing for it. And totally out of the blue, I didn't know either of them, but they invited me over to do a collab with them back in 2018. So you meet them, you have a good drink, you chuck ideas around. And I was like, have you had Trois-Monts, this Bière de Garde? It's like absolutely stunning. It's like, it's what I brought to the table for the collab. And they were like, love it. Sai's like, and this is the first time I've met Sai. He's like, I love Saisons. I love Belgian beer. I've never had this beer, but it's like, it's right up there with where I want to like drink and experiment with. So that was a firm yes. And then we were like, right, it's a collab. And McColl's were in a silly, daft experimental phase. So they go, what are we going to put in it? Looking through all the fruit and vegetables that we could look, And Youssef was just like, beetroot is available all year round. It means we can sell it all year round. It'll make sense all year round. And it's just totally drinkable. And then we discussed it. We were like, it works with the whole farmyard, like the farm labourer of the land, a beer that stores and is drinkable all year. And we just committed, we just convinced ourselves, like this is 6 years ago, and it was only on a tiny little pilot scale. It was only about 200-300 litres that we were brewing on.
Okay.
A tiny little pilot kit. And we absolutely loved it. We'd done a launch event across Head of Steams. We done like a beer and food pairing menu. And the three of us just totally fell in love with the beer. So the next year, we committed it to brewing it at our 2,500 litres. And at that stage, kind of falling in love with it. So we brewed it. We had Si and Youssef come back over to ours, another Tooth and Claw collab. And it just got received really, really, really well. Roll on COVID. We had a batch in tank ready to be launched in March 2020. We got half of it into keg, and then we put the rest into Rioja barrel.
Oh, wow.
We've done a Rioja barrel-aged version of it.
And oh, my God.
I think it's the highest rated beer on Untappd at like 4.25 or something.
That sounds like a really interesting beer. I mean,
it's all
the
gone.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure.
The shadows of history now.
I mean, Beet de Garde, I mean, you know, the beetroot beer in itself, but then barrel aging Rioja barrels. Wow.
So it's kind of got this silly, it is quite silly cult following, but ultimately the beer, it does sound ludicrous, but it's not like a, it's not a wacky fruit smoothie style beer. It's pretty much pin bright. It's just like, it's like a red, it's like a red IPA almost to look at, with a bit more crimson hue to it, but it's stupidly drinkable. It's very earthy. It's got a lot of peppery, grassy kind of earth, deep, rich notes to it, but then it's got that really aromatic, sweet beetroot like character to it. And then, I suppose, depending on your kind of taste buds, I get a pungent amount of sweetness, but it's quite a crisp, dry finish to it as well. So for me, it runs the whole gambit of flavours, from a big, rich aroma, heady booziness, punchy, earthy character with deep, rich sweetness, and then a nice, crisp, dry finish.
Wow. Excellent.
And it's just launched last week.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, this week's one, the non-Rioja barrel aged one, but you've just launched the 2024 version. So hopefully that's still around, you know, by the time this goes out, 10th of April this is going to go out. So by that time, hopefully there'll still be plenty of it left. Well, not plenty of it, obviously, because I'm sure that it's going to be a popular beer.
There definitely will be some left. It'll literally be on the website in can as of yesterday, is in the 9th of April, because the canning machine's been down, so it's getting canned in 2 weeks' time. So it's out in keg at the moment. You can get it from brilliant pubs across the country, but it'll be in can, so it's basically just maturing in tank for a little bit longer. And it'll be in can as of Tuesday the 9th.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, I mean, maturing in the storage is no bad thing, is it?
We were joking today that we're going to rebrand it as Beet de Garde de Garde, because de Garde just means to like chill out and mellow and lager. And so it's having an extra de Garde.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic. Right, so when we talk about your beers, there's one particular beer and one particular something that the beer represents that's really, really important to you. So let's talk about the beer, Let's Eat Pies, and talk about men's mental health. But let's talk about the beer, but also the whole, you know, what it means and Men's Pie Club and what that means to you.
Yeah, man. Men's Pie Club are just, they're so close to my heart, but pretty much everybody they work with, they touch their hearts, because what they do is they just help men that find themselves socially isolated or loss of belonging in men's life. Obviously, which has like a follow-on effect to their mental health. They approach and tackle that in such a genuine, authentic, and really practical way that they are turning men's lives around in such a slow and gradual way, but genuinely effective and deep down. They just do brilliant work currently across the Northeast and Leeds. So they started up in Bike Air up in Newcastle, but over the last 4 years they've grown to cover the whole of the Northeast and now Leeds. And I hope nothing stops them, because what they do is just absolutely brilliant in the most genuine, easygoing, informal like approach to tackling massive core issues in so many men's lives. I could talk for hours just about Men's Pie Club on their own.
Well, I mean, as you say, it's northeast and now into Leeds. Hopefully it'll expand into other areas of the UK as well, because that's needed across the whole of the country.
Yeah, man. Yeah. To follow on with the beer. So back in November 2020, deep into, I don't even know if we were in lockdown at that point. We maybe had been let out, or maybe we were in topsy-turvy
It's all
land.
confusing. It's all
Yeah,
confusing, isn't
I
it?
can't remember. We were previously supplying the kind of the parent agency of Men's Pie Club, which is a social enterprise called Food Nation, which works with like underprivileged individuals who want to kind of get going in life. Food Nation, like, help them, obviously involving food, just get a foot up in life. It was a kitchen for deprived individuals that could just learn skills and maybe go on to a career in food or restaurateur. So we were supplying them with beers back in, God, 2018, 2019, and through 2020 as lockdown happened. And then their founder, Jamie Sadler, who is just the most positive, front foot, like evangelical, like just amazing individual. He got in touch with us in November 2020. Danny, like on the phone, Danny, what can we do? What can we do? We've got to do something for this whole COVID lockdown like shit show. It's coming up to January. Christmas is going to be like smokes and mirrors for people's mental health. January's the most critical time for suicides in male individuals. Social isolation drops off a cliff in January, and all of that collectiveness of December disappears, and men just disintegrate, for want of a better description. So Jamie was like, what are we going to do to really like kick this in the arse, like shout about it, and come out all guns blazing? Right, we can do this. We can create a beer, we can get it in a can, we can do it before Christmas. And I don't know who's got credit for the name, but within 30 minutes of talking, it was like, let's eat pies and talk. Like, it was just in conversation. Let's eat pies and like talk about men's mental health. And it came up about three or four times. And within an hour, we had a can design done. All you can see on the can is let's eat pies and talk about men's mental health. It's got nothing to do with us, the brewery. It's got nothing to do with like selling anything else. It's just black and white, buy the beer, donate money to charity, learn about Men's Pie Club, and take it from there. And within that phone call, the beer was brewed in can and in shops within 5 weeks. And all of the supply, every single person involved, from labels, cans, malt, hops, yeast, packaging, donated everything for free.
Fantastic.
And we raised £2,500 in like 4 weeks for them. It was like literally the beer sold out almost instantaneously. It was stupendous. And then since then, we've committed to brewing it every January. So we release it. It's the first beer that comes out the first week in January every year for us now. So every, like, say the 4th of January every year, we make a big song and dance about men's mental health, about Men's Pie Club, and just get talking because we're crap at it. So if it revolves around beer and it brings people out of their shells, we just make a kerfuffle and we just make a conversation around it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Is it the same recipe every year or do you tweak it, change it?
No. So the first year was a black and white peppered bitter deliberately to accompany a pie.
Okay.
And then the second year was an oatmeal stout, which has been used in so many pies is unbelievable.
I can imagine, yeah.
This year it was a 3.4% cask only IPA, launched only in pubs. We didn't put it in can, so we basically made everybody get out of the house and go to a pub and maybe have a conversation and just like talk about the beer outside of their own basically.
I suppose that makes a great deal of sense, doesn't it? Because part of the idea is that not to have people isolated. If they're just grabbing the cans of it and drinking at home on their own, you don't have that interaction. But having to get out to the pub, that makes perfect sense.
The cans work brilliantly to get the message out there, and it worked to get it further afield. But I think now, I think people almost know us as the Let's Eat Pies and Talk About Men's Mental Health brewery. doing it all in cask now, it travels across the country and people get out of that circle. So we don't almost need the cans now. We're happy that people are aware of it, that to get them into the pub is the perfect answer, basically.
And I mean, going back to the pie club itself, you guys have one of the clubs at your tap room, don't you, every couple of weeks?
We're absolutely blessed. And it's a genuine partnership that takes no hard work. We don't even need to speak of how it ticks over and develops. Saying that, Men's Pie Club are on it. They're making sure things develop and progress properly and that all of the men that take part are seeing benefits. But on a day-to-day running basis, it's just an absolute pleasure and a doddle to say operate. I don't even operate it. It runs fortnightly from the tap room because we only open every fortnight anyway. So on a Saturday morning, there's about 12 blokes from the surrounding area turn up at about 9:30 in the morning. They're like a bunch of old fishwives. They just turn up. They tell stories about what they've been up to, what ingredients they're using to cook, what troubles they've got going on in their life, but not in a therapy kind of way, just in a little chat, maybe a cup of tea early on. And then they'll get the pie makers out and they'll start making their pastry. They'll pontificate over how much coriander's going in the mix that week. they'll complain about too much garlic or a sprig too much of whatever. It's just a pleasure to watch them. Like, they'd have been sat at home, maybe he's worrying or like feeling shit about something, and just see them blossom and like, and I've seen a lot of them develop over 2.5 years. It's just brilliant, man. And we're so proud to have one of them based at Word Tap Room in Evenwood.
Yeah, oh no, that's fantastic. Absolutely, it sounds like great. I mean, you know, one of the reasons that I'd be happy for it to sort of come down south is that it sounds like an awesome thing to go to. To be honest, I'd love to attend one.
The kind of scope and plans for Men's Pie Club is ultimately to roll out nationwide, but that's probably like a decade-long project. But
yeah, I guess so.
If anybody is listening to this and wants to reach out to Men's Pie Club, they have a brilliant franchise structure. They're brilliantly professional. And if it's an opportunity that works for literally everybody involved, not just Pie Club, if it works for everybody, it's worth just reaching out and like pitching it to them, because they're always looking for the right people to work with and like develop and push it and reach more blokes. So if anyone's listening to it, or if they just want to turn up to a local Pie Club in anywhere from Leeds, Middlesbrough, Bishop Auckland, up to the Tyne Valley and Newcastle, like there's ones dotted around all over the place. Just get in touch or have a look online, and I am sure they'll welcome them.
Yeah, yeah. Excellent, excellent. Okay, fantastic. Well, talking more about some of your beers, and we'll talk about some collaborations now, because I had a look on your website and I saw a nice little 2024 beer release calendar. Yeah. I love that, actually, by the way. I really do love breweries that do that. That's so you know what's coming out. Yeah, it sounds like he's sort of got his spreadsheets out, but no, it sounds brilliant. But on that, you mention two collabs, home collabs, a spring collab and an autumn collab.
Yeah.
But it's quite secretive on there. It just says collab. Are there any details you can tell us about those?
The autumn one I can't, because it's still very much in development.
Right.
Like exact time, specifics, beer style. That's like, there's a lot still. It's still a while off. So we're still like sorting bits and pieces out. But the spring one, I can go into a hell of a lot of detail.
Okay, go for it.
I feel we've been super fortunate, but we've also committed and put a lot of time and effort into making this work. So I feel like we're deep in this now. So it's like there's a lot going on, and we can't wait for it to be launched on the 26th of April. So in about 3 weeks' time from this podcast coming out. But as of like now, we can happily confirm that it's a six-way collab. So a seven-way collab if you include the hop supplier. So it's ourselves plus six breweries, which are Abbeydale, Atte, Anspach and Hobday, Brew York, Moor, and Roosters.
Wow.
Plus the hop supplier, Barpass X. And the whole collaboration, the whole project, comes under the banner of Mayday. And what it is a full-on expansion of our previous work with Men's Pie Club.
Mm-hmm.
So it all surrounds, and it is a big national collaboration, ultimately, to raise awareness of men's mental health. Mm-hmm. So it's got three charities that it's working with, and that is the aforementioned Men's Pie Club. They seem to come everywhere we come. We love having
absolutely.
And then we've got the amazing Man Up, who want to fight the stigma of just Man Up and just get on with it and just bottle it and forget about it. They want to tackle that and break it down and develop the conversation around men's mental health. And Bristol-based The Grieving Pint, who tackle a much younger audience in their mid-20s, and they've got loads of clubs based around the Bristol area, basically providing a venue or a number of venues where individuals can just come and just over a pint, just discuss whatever's going on in their life, escaping whatever else is kind of maybe just holding them back or pinning them down or stressing them, and just giving them a chance to vent that in a real safe space. And I know a lot of people will rightly bring up the fact that there's alcohol involved in ourselves and Men's Pie Club collaboration and this larger collaboration, but it's got nothing to do with overconsumption. It's got nothing to do with pushing alcohol. What it is, what it pivots around is the community, the pub, and the sense of the pub is a place where people can come together and felt a sense of belonging and kinship and the ability to just talk rubbish and get rid of their woes and let whatever was holding them down kind of come out. And we hope that the pub and the community and the support that that creates never disappears, although it has been taken a battering of recent. We hope that projects like this, but wider kind of community-based pub-focused projects, just drag it back into the heart of communities, whether it's a bustling city centre or a little village where we live or a brewery tap room, just come together and talk about stuff and just keep that hub in that community. Like, it's essential. And that, like, that's what we want to create around these projects, whether it's Men's Pie Club, Grieve and Pint, or May Day Project, which is what this collaboration's all about.
Fantastic. So is that one beer or is that a series of beers?
That is a big series of beers. So they'll all have a theme because they're all promoting Bar Parsex's hops, amazing hop product. And I'll get back onto them in a second. We've got a hoppy table beer. We have an extra hoppy beer, which is our own take on it, kind of derank, extra hoppy saison. We have a West Coast IPA, a Session Cold IPA, a Session Pale, and a Poppy Pale Ale. They're all very low ABV. They're very easy drinking, and they promote the hops that Bar Farsex have really happily donated for the entire project. So all of that money that Barf have donated is going straight to the charities.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Yeah. Oh, and they come out in April, you say? Which day?
Yeah, the 26th of April. We are launching at 25 venues across the entire UK, all at the same time, all six beers at all 25 venues. And we'll also have a six-pack of all six cans available online from our website with all six beers in. So you'll be able to get hold of the beer, hopefully, anywhere in the country, basically.
Fantastic. So people should keep their eyes on your socials then for all the details about where they can go and enjoy those beers.
Absolutely.
In person.
Yeah, basically, tomorrow. It's tricky with this coming out later. So Friday the 29th, there'll have already been a kind of teaser and a summary of the collaborations. Mm-hmm. And then Easter Sunday, there will be a big launch of what the project is. And then by the time this is out, all of the breweries and the beers will have been announced. Then all of the charities and then all of the venues and everything involved will be like out in the world. It'll just be ready to talk about, develop, push, and just make happen, basically.
Oh, superb. Well, very much something to look forward to.
It's a bit nervous and exciting. So,
yeah.
May Day Project, national collaboration, raising awareness for men's mental health, launching on Friday, April the 26th, across the land.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Keep your eyes open for that, everybody. I'm sure it's going to be absolutely outstanding. Right. So, on to other projects. Now that sounds like a real, you know, big project and it will come to a great fruition, I'm sure. But there's another project that I was reading about on your website, on your blog. And I think it's a jokey little thing, but actually I think the whole idea and the whole discussion on that blog post was really actually very, very salient. It's Project Mr. Matey.
Yeah.
About head retention. And I think actually that is quite, because I agree with you, with what you wrote on that the blog about, you know, nobody wants a flat pint of beer, and sometimes you do get beers that you pour out, or you, or even sometimes in a pub, and it's very underwhelming in its head. And there were quite a few key points about the best way to make sure that you're getting a decent head. Obviously, things that you can do in the brewing end of it, through to then dispense and pouring and all that kind of stuff. So, talk to us about head retention.
Yeah, man. It's ultimately something we see as being extremely important. And obviously we kind of geek out on it. It's obviously what we kind of sit and pontificate about at the brewery a lot. This is where we feel like we earn our crust. We bring what we've learned over decades and like speaking to every end of the industry. So all the way from suppliers, whether that's water, malt, hops, yeast, all the way through to chemical suppliers and end users, pubs, landlords, bar staff. It shows the complexity of the entire industry in such a small aspect of beer, because if one of them critical variables falls by the wayside, it can almost undo anything. And the irritating one is bloody a piece of lipstick on a glass can just ruin a pint. And it's like everyone can point in the right direction, and one thing can just bring the whole pack of cards down. But that project, Mr. Matey, is about everybody in the chain, us included, doing everything we can to get you the best pint, almost so you don't notice it, so you don't care about it. You said there's nothing more disappointing than getting a flat pint at a bar. I don't think it would ruin your night, but it can definitely change the focus of a night away from having a great giggle with family or friends, maybe celebrating something or commiserating or just wanting a quiet pint whilst you're reading a book or waiting for a train to turn up. And if that head just goes, it can just like completely change the focus of what should be an enjoyable experience. So Si developed Project Mr. Matey about a year and a half ago. And God, we tested two beers before Christmas side by side. Crowded Lager, Crowded Pilsner, side by side. One from a year and a half ago. Granted, it was a little bit older, so it had lost a bit of flavour. But both in can, both kept chilled for this purpose. So we batch reference everything, we keep it chilled in the cellar, and then we reference them later on, like a year or so down the line, to check how they're developing. And this one was held just to develop how Project Mr. Matey had influenced it. And God, it was unbelievable. It was just category, it was day and night on the head retention.
Really?
The texture of it, the structure of it, and the longevity was just unbelievable. Obviously, we could control a lot of the variables like glass cleanliness and like making sure it was the right glass. But coming out a can, we just poured the two, and the new one just sat there, perfect, lovely structure, held its weight all the way down the glass. It was sparkling, it was tasty, it was effervescent. And it just, for us, it just like vindicates all of them tiny, and I'm talking tiny little boring things to many of people, that Si just wants to dial in over the course of very small tweaks over 15, 20 different brews that have just resulted in where we're current Crowded Pilsner is at. We'll apply that approach to loads of different aspects now across loads of different beers. But yeah, Project Mr. Matey, it proved a case, and it just gives you a nicer pint at the end of the day. That is, I could geek out and pontificate over it, but it ultimately makes your experience better, and that's what it's about.
Yeah, no, for sure. And you know, I think a lot of people might be thinking that, you know, in pubs, they'll always get, because you know, when they pour it, they'll always be ahead. But it's not about being presented with a flat beer. It's about how long it takes until finally that head subsides. And If it's within a couple of minutes, then you know it can have been presented in front of you with the most glorious of head, but if it doesn't stay there, that's irrelevant.
That is it, man. We love work, and since COVID, we managed to weed out venues that had no appreciation for not different styles of beer per se, but just venues that really appreciated quality. So post-COVID, we knew if we were going to invest in the brewery and put a lot of effort into Project Mr. Matey, there was no point in handing that beer over to a venue that didn't give a shit. Mm. And working with venues that get it, that love it, and want it to be presented and then live on through the lifetime of that pint, we are so happy walking away knowing that the majority of our customers are so on it that it just makes our job easy, man. Makes our job easy.
Fantastic. Going on to another one of your beers that I've got, one of the cans that I have in the pack, and it's one that I really can't wait to try because I really, really love a West Coast IPA. And not just that, not just do I love the style, I've also been told by, I think, at least three or four other people that this one, El Capitan, is an astounding West Coast IPA.
Thank you so much, man, Paul. Do you know what? Other than Lowlands, and Lowlands is so close to my heart because it's a style that I've loved for decades.
Yeah.
El Cap is like on par in my heart with Lowlands. And I'm a recent convert to West Coast IPAs. I have very little American brewing influence in my life. Probably, talking about a pale ale, is probably the only beer that tugged at my heartstrings in the last decade. Other than that, and that's through English import, I have very little influence from America. And then brewing a West Coast IPA, it's only 3 years we've been brewing it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. I can appreciate and I can understand why it's so close to us now, why I love it so much, because it's obviously got that backbone of English heritage kicking off the American craft beer boom.
Yeah,
I can see it's kind of its relation to quite traditional British beers, but just dialed in and amplified and executed brilliantly with pretty much some of the world's best hops.
Mm.
I'm a bit ashamed to say I didn't get onto it earlier. Now I'm a massive convert, and I'm just so chuffed that Cy, and it's not, I kind of like to think that I have quite a bit of influence with refining the beers and hopefully just dialing them in over a couple of years, but Cy brings the initial concept to the board and just executing a brilliant West Coast IPA. We even talked earlier this year about bringing it into a core range. It's that.
Well, I was going to say that, it's listed as seasonal, but I wondered if it might get promoted at some point.
Yeah, I think we still need to test the water. We've got, it's getting brewed again this November.
Mm.
And I think if the sales don't drop off, as long as people don't get bored of it. And I think what people are taking it to their heart. I think if we prove the case again this November, I think that's a genuine reason to keep it in the core beer range. More specifically on the beer, man. What is, and not specifically El Cap, just the beer style. What is not to love?
Yeah.
Booze, heady hop aroma, that piney, resiny stickiness.
Yeah.
I just want that in my lungs.
Yeah.
Then you get deep caramel malt, which I'm a northern boy, so I love brown ales, I love Scotch ales, I love wee heavies, and I love Belgian ales, which have got that bigger malt character. El Cap brings everything to the party, and then it slaps you around the face with an amazing bitterness. It's stunning. It should be adopted in the UK as some heritage style, I reckon, because it's everything we want in a beer, personally.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd say that it's probably my favorite beer style, to be honest.
Oh,
Yeah.
do you know what? I'm not like, I genuinely think if you sat a West Coast IPA and a Bière de Garde side by side, maybe he's lacking the West Coast hop aroma in a Bière de Garde.
Yeah.
There's good similarities. They're not identical, but there's refreshing crispness, there's malt character, there's different hop character, but there's booze, there's aroma, there's so much, there's Moorishness to both of them as well, that I think we've basically both got really good beer style.
Yeah. Excellent. Oh, well, as I say, I'm really looking forward to trying that out, and it would be marvelous if it ended up being a core beer. But as you say, you've got to test the waters and make sure that it's worthwhile for you guys. Yeah.
I hope you enjoy it, Paul. I do.
Oh, I'm sure I will. As I say, it's a few separate, unconnected people that have all said that it is an outstanding West Coast IPA. So, I've got nothing but trust for all of their opinions, and I'm sure that I'm going to love it. Right, okay. So, I've got a question to pose to you now, which is not from me, it's from my last guest. Okay, so the last episode, the main guest was Paul Jones of Cloudwater.
Oh, bloody hell.
And he's posed a question, which I think is a great positive question to have, which is really good. So Paul's question is,
What's the most joyous and exciting thing about being in the beer industry right now?
Without sounding too kind of waffly and ethereal, and not marketing bullshitty kind of way. It's for me, and it's always, this has been through all of my life in hospitality and both sides of the bar and having a brewery and working in the industry and seeing landlords and like how places are ran, successful ones, is a genuine sense of community. And my mum and dad's, not me mum and dad's pub, they don't own a pub, they've got nothing to do with beer. The pub round the corner from their house is where I cut my teeth, is where I learned how a brilliant establishment was ran, how the centre of a community can focus around a pub, and whether it's a quiet individual sat in a corner or a brilliant party to celebrate something, or a wake, or just a game of pool, or a lad's night out. That pub can drag people in and be a magnet for amazing times and positive stories and consolidation and like bringing people together. And whether craft beer got the wrong image or not, 5, 10 years ago, I don't know. I wasn't heavily involved in it before we launched in 2017. So I don't know what the community was like. But now I just see tap rooms, beer festivals, brilliant pubs. Even the style of beer is coming back to, rather than overconsumption and wackiness, it's what about a beer that you can just sit and chat with your mates over? Like everything seems to be pointing towards more sensible measures and more genuine reasons. And if I had to put a word on it, I'd say community. And I think that is, for me, not just our focus, but I do see the wider craft beer industry honing in on that now. So I think that if we stick with that as an industry, and the macro big beer won't do it, the latter, they'll probably use it as a buzzword, but I think the craft beer industry to come through its initial like lesser mature days, and it's beer style wise, and what breweries are doing now are definitely maturing, and quality wise they're getting like they're so reliable now. I think with a focus on community, I think this industry will just blossom, and that for me is genuinely exciting.
Excellent. So so it's the community that the beer industry has built up, that specifically craft beer industry has built up.
Yeah, it genuinely makes me like buzz. But if I'm like, I've just done a weekend shift at the tap room, and like my days are stupidly long. I could do with a weekend off, just to spend with a the family. They deserve it to chill out. But working in the tap room is just flipping class. Just having them conversations over the bar, catching up with really good friends, that is just electric. And long may that continue. That makes me like really positive about what craft beer can be.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, excellent answer. So, Danny, can you now set a question that I can put to the next guest, please?
Oh, God. See, that was a bloody brilliant one, that, from Paul. Because we do some styles that aren't particularly going to get the limelight, they're not the poster boys of beer styles. What style of beer would your next guest brew from their heart without any concern about marketing, saleability, availability of ingredients, something that they just want to see there on a bar or in a fridge that would just make them smile that they maybe haven't had the opportunity to brew? And it could be anything. It could be as wacky left field, let the brain go, or it could just be something that, for whatever reason, they just haven't decided to brew to date. Or maybe it's something in their core range that they're smashing out and they're just chuffed that it's constantly in their brew calendar. Just something that is them through and through that they would love to either brew or are brewing. Yeah.
Right. Okay, fantastic. I will put that to the next guest. It'll be interesting to see what the answer is. Danny, I've had a great time chatting with you this evening. Thanks so much. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for taking the time. The beers are tasting great. As I say, I've finished the cold IPA in the Lowlands yesterday. It was great. So really looking forward to the rest of them.
Honestly, man, Paul, thank you so much for A, inviting us on, B, letting me just talk, because I have a tendency to just ramble on, but always the opportunity to just get over, obviously, stuff regarding men's mental health, but just what we are as a brewery and how we like to conduct ourselves and stuff we love and stuff we like to do is, I'm just very grateful for the opportunity. So thank you very much, Paul.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure, Danny. Cheers.
And it was an absolute pleasure. Danny is such a lovely guy and was very open and honest in our conversation. His commitment to Men's Pie Club and men's mental health in general is to be applauded. Get yourself along to one of those if you're in Leeds or in the Northeast. And who knows, maybe they might start making their way down south soon. I'd strongly recommend laying your hands on Danny's beers. Lowlands was amazing. I did leave plenty of it to drink without the ginger beer, and I absolutely loved it. The cold IPA I had while we chatted really hit the spot, and I'm looking forward to trying the others too, especially El Capitan. And that collaboration project, Mayday, also sounds incredible. I must look out for somewhere around here that will be pouring all six beers. The launch date is 26th of April for that project. Keep your eyes on McColl's socials for news of the venues that will be pouring the beers, or go to their website and order yourself a pack of the cans. That's all we have time for on this episode. Thanks for listening. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram, where I am at BeerPrimeUK on both. Email me, beerprimeuk@gmail.com, or leave me a voice message at speakpipe.com/beerprime. Now, shameless plug time, if you're also into films as well as beer, why not try out my brand new podcast that I've started up with my son? It's called Film Club the Podcast. It's on Spotify, but surprisingly hard to find, and much easier to locate on Google Podcasts or YouTube Music as it is now, Apple Podcasts and Amazon Music, or go to at Film Club the Pod on Twitter or Instagram, and you'll find a link there. The reason I say that it's hard to find on some of them is that there seem to be quite a lot of podcasts called Film Club. Maybe we should have looked a lot harder before naming it, but there you go. Anyway, join me in a couple of weeks' time for the next Beer Prime episode, which, as previously mentioned, will be recorded at Hopstop and will be a homebrew episode with Elusive Brewing's Andy Parker. Cheers.